Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings and greetings. Greetings and blessings to those who are alive, because we're to stay alive in Torah Chaim. In terms of life, Torah Chesed. In terms of kindness, Torah Rachamim, mercies. We now tune into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly assert we are the higher inner frequency. We call ourselves Soul Talk. This is Soul Talk number 816, Proverbs, Teachings to Access Wisdom and Righteousness, presentation number 33. Blessed is our eternal creator, Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human condition. With the creator's help, our next broadcast is taking place right now, April 21st, 2024, at 12 p.m. high noon, in April, not the month of June, Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, equals AKA equals USA, Unified Soul Actualization. An essential topic for discussion will be sharing the written and oral Torah traditions regarding King Solomon's Proverbs, one of the most powerful teachings from the Israelite Tanakh Torah prophet's holy writings. If you want to make the show a little bit more organic, you can call in at 563-999-3688. That's 563-999-3688. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. The tags for today's show are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, coming soon, soon come. Children of Israel working with the children of Noah to remove hatred, jealousy, and competition not needed in this blessed world. Written in all traditions of the 12 tribes of Israel, Galif, Galifa, Batir, Elah. And joining me today is our co-host for the past almost 14 years, Dennis Ryan, student activist, advocate for the dispersion of the teachings of the Nesher Godol, the Rambam, Moshe Maimon. Right, we're opening up today's program with music from my good friend, Isaac Patone. And here comes the time from his Generation Redemption album, which we do believe we are the generation of redemption. And, excuse me, you're going to hear, aside from the lowering of the music, you might hear some drilling. We got some plumbing issues to take care of in the house right before Passover, Pesach, but that's okay. You know, this is just part of what life can bring to us, all these different types of unique circumstances. We're also broadcasting live on Blog Talk Radio. And hopefully, Dennis, first of all, we'd like to say hello to our audience on Blog Talk Radio and FaceTime Live. Dennis? I have you, you should be live, Dennis. So now you're on hold. I'm putting you back on live, Dennis. Dennis, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Don.
Okay, we couldn't hear you. Anyway, well, good morning, sir. And with all the commotion and emotion and projections of what's going on in the creation, I felt we should take a step back. We're not even really going to talk about Pesach, Passover. Maybe next Sunday we will. But I want to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart, because I'm getting older, and you are already at the age, according to the ethics of our father from the sages of Israel, Shmonim Negevurah, you're a mighty man because you reached the age of 80 plus. And this is a instant message I get yesterday from a friend, Joel Garfinkel, who is a Facebook friend, and we just exchange pleasantries, and I mentioned I'm feeling blessed. It's almost Pesach, Passover, and in my humble opinions, we're seeing prophecies manifesting before our very eyes. So we said, that's good to hear. I'm doing pretty good as well, getting more slower and older each day, but I can't complain because it's natural. But I've been enjoying every moment of my life. So my response was, keep on enjoying every moment, which God is surely blessing you every moment of your life. So Dennis, before we get into a letter by the Lubavitcher Rebbe addressing the issue of aging, because unfortunately there's part of the American culture is that sometimes we dismiss our elderly instead of revering them. So Dennis, you as someone, an octogenarian, your feelings on enjoying every moment which God has blessed you to enjoy in your life?
Well, from a human viewpoint, it's very important. Why? Because you've lasted long enough on the planet to run out of excuses. You must realize that you are getting closer and closer to the end point. That end point is not to be fooled around with. So you cannot use all the excuses you've been using all your life while you've been sitting on the planet called Earth. Why? Because you should know better. You should be closer to God. You should be able to understand him, and you should be able to understand why you must love him. You must love your neighbor. You must love everything that's on the earth. Why? Because God put us here. He put us here for a purpose. That purpose becomes louder and clearer the older you get. You cannot ignore it. You cannot use baby excuses. You can't use excuses from the 20s or your teenager and other years. You've learned to live with yourself. You should be communicating with God and showing him some love, respect, and gratitude. Gratitude that he put you here on the earth and gave you a chance to prove yourself. If you can show that you deserve heaven, God will make sure that happens. That's part of the deal of being put on the earth. But the longer you live, the more you should learn and the more you should know. So we have a duty as we get older to prepare for the next life. And the next life is called heaven. If you've led a good life and you love yourself, you love your neighbor, and you certainly love God and everything he's created. That is the purpose as to why we're here. So to show that we have proven that we're worthy of the next life. So you go around with that in the back of your head because it's not that far away. I feel sorry for those people who died at an early age, never had a chance to develop all the properties of humanity. They were taken while they were much younger. Therefore, they know less. But as you get older, you should know more. You should realize more and realize that you're getting closer and closer to God. It's a reality for all humans as we age. So, what have you done to show your God that you deserve heaven? Are you doing good? Are you finally getting rid of bad and evil habits? You should be able to. Why? Because you're older, wiser, smarter, and you're getting closer to the end point of a transition to another world. If you don't realize that, you're only fooling yourself. But if you're fooling yourself, that means you're in cahoots with the devil in some way, shape, or form. He has got you to believe that you are going to a better place called hell. But hell is not a good place. You should know that. That's part of getting old. You must realize where you stand in your whole life. And have you anything to show for the life? You must be able to show that you have taken the attributes that God has given you as a human and use them on a positive basis. If you haven't, be prepared for the final judgment. Don't be surprised if you haven't anything to show for yourself. You must have. If you've been on the planet long enough, no excuses. You should be doing good things. You know what they are. You understand. And you must practice that.
Thank you, Dennis. So I just want to point out again that as we've been doing the last couple of months, maybe 3 months now, that the ratio of people being born into this blessed world is still remaining at a rate of, for every person that passes on to the next level of life, as Lubavitch Rebbe, may his merits be a blessing for us, that 84,475 people have passed on this kinetic world population count. It's called worldometers.info/world-population/. And 84,000 plus have passed on, but over 186,000 people have been born. Also, I just want to point out that in terms of our listening audience, we still have America as the major listener people in this blessed country of America, 83.09%. Australia, I think, has picked up a little bit at 5.88%. And I'm blessing the people in Australia pretty close to, I think they're 20 hours ahead of us, so they're pretty close to the Passover festival, followed by Parlez-vous Français in 2.21%, du speaking the Deutsch in Germany, 1.47%, probably Argentina, and we also have Italy with less than 1%, and of course, teeny tiny little land of Israel, but the Holy Land, less than 1% are listening. So I want to go from what Dennis was talking about by reading a portion, and I think in the coming weeks, Dennis, I want to keep on doing this because, you know, I think for society to thrive, we have to turn to those who came in the generation or two generations, sometimes three generations of people. I have to admit the oldest person I ever met was on the corner of Schenectady Avenue and President Street. This was, I think this was way before Corona, maybe 7-8 years ago. He was 97 years old. That was the oldest human being I ever met. But the Rebbe addressed this whole idea that there is a, unfortunately, and I can't speak about this about European society or African society or Asiatic society or, you know, the out in the far islands of Japan and New Zealand and Australia and New Guinea and Madagascar, which I think is off the coast of Africa. There's a certain viewpoint in America that the Rebbe really criticized very strongly. I'm going to go into this, about 2 pages of this reading. I'm looking forward to what Dennis has to say. Here he goes. American society has trained us to regard the waning of a person's physical power as a failing and to view people of advanced age as less able to produce and achieve. Some encourage older people to look positive at this change. Quote, you've earned the right to take it easy. You deserve a rest. End of quote. Others put it more bluntly. Quote, you're no longer useful. It's time to make room for others. End of quote. This tendency to push people into retirement affects the mentality of the people themselves. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy as many resign themselves to living less productive and meaningful lives as they age. So the Torah offers a different outlook, stating, quote, an abundance of years will endow knowledge, end of quote. And that's from the book of Job. You can learn that by going to chapter 32, verse 7. Now our sages, at the conclusion of the Oral Torah Talmudic tractate of Kinim, which deals with different types of lice, which can involve in making problems with our food and other issues, that our sage explained that as a Torah scholar, or people immersed in the knowledge of the divine, and again, I'm not going to be culture-centric. For us of Jewish people, this is our source. Other people could dice and slice it into their own faith-based texts or their oral traditions. I know there's still very strong oral traditions in the world. But our sages claim that as a Torah scholar grows older, their understanding becomes more settled. Nor does this apply to scholars, as our sages instruct us to stand in respect, even for an unlearned person who is advanced in years. Why would we stand for an unlearned person who is advanced in years? For the very experiences that he or she has undergone grant him or her insight and perception unavailable to a younger person. Such a person is fundamentally a thinking being. As a person's understanding increases with age, there is no reason that his activity should not also increase. A seasoned person has the ability to serve as a resource for others, aiding them with guidance and counsel. This allows him to exert a far more comprehensive influence than was possible in his youth, when his energies were spent primarily in the pursuit of his own self-development. Pushing an aged person aside thus creates great waste, not only for the person himself, but for those who seek to displace him. They deprive themselves of the wisdom that comes with age. The sheer energy of younger men cannot possibly compensate for the loss of wisdom. This is particularly true in the present age, when advances in technology and communications have reduced the importance of physical exertion. Now more than ever, it is knowledge and understanding that power economic and social growth. In such an era, individuals who possess these qualities in abundance should be treasured, not cast aside. So it's natural to strive for more than one has, our sages have stated, based on the teaching of Ramban and Rabban Bechaya, that whoever possesses 100 seeks 200. An advance in age should not dampen this drive. On the contrary, the knowledge and insight that only come with experience should spur us on to pursue larger and more far-reaching goals. We are told in the book of Job, chapter 5, verse 7, man was born to toil. As a person's years are lengthened, his toil and his fruits should also grow. On the other hand, a person goes forward in life, there is a place for redefinition of priorities, where at any age it is living, not really making a living, that is of fundamental importance. Again, I'll repeat that statement, I think it's very important. For at any age, it's the act of living, not just making a living, that is of fundamental importance. You should try to live within the blessings that the Almighty has given you. That's me speaking parenthetically. As a person grows older, financial burdens become less. Children marry, become living, independent beings. This provides an opportunity to refocus one's ambition. In early years, there might have been times that when a person, quote-unquote, ate, slept, and drank his business, end of quote. But now, or his work, his profession, whatever it may be, now there's a chance for a person to lift his or her eyes to other horizons and augment his or her spiritual growth. The fact that a person's physical vigor is waning and his wisdom is increasing, and our sages have taught us from the book of Zohar, the book of light, the book of shining, the weakness of the body is the strength of the soul. So that a person is no longer the vim and vigor of, say, like when he's a 20-year-old, should not make a person feel sad, but it should be a catalyst, an antecedent for increasing the spirit that is in the body, that should give him insight into the area he chooses to direct his energies. With the following paragraph, we'll conclude, and hopefully we'll go on with this next week. The heightened spiritual awareness that results will infuse vitality into every dimension of experience, enabling him to live a truly full life. This, in turn, will give him the opportunity to anticipate and thus precipitate the ultimate of all experience, the era of the redemption, when, as it says in the book of Zechariah, in chapter 8, verse 4, older men and older women once again sit in the streets of Jerusalem. May this take place in the immediate future. And let me expand this on a universal level. Older men and older women will sit in the streets of wherever they are in the world to talk about the blessings and the fact that they're enjoying every living moment they have with the grace of the Almighty. So, Dennis, your take on this insight from Lubavitcher Rebbe.
Well, for one thing, we all get old. That doesn't mean we're getting better. If you haven't had your brain active and have accumulated wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, you may not have anything to give back to humanity if you don't have anything to show for it. So there are some elderly people who have lost a lot of their mental ability. And as they're older, their physical ability is faded, and they have no more future to look at. However, there are older people who still have sharp minds. They still have things to contribute. And they're willing to contribute if people will listen. So we ask the youth, middle-aged people, to understand things that we have learned over the years that would be helpful to them. If they want to reject it, fine. But we still have something to offer if we're mentally alert. And that mental understanding is very important, because you may lose your physicality as you get older. That doesn't mean you're going to lose your intellectual acumen or knowledge or speed of your mind. There are elderly people that still have good words to help younger people to understand what their future is going to be. That doesn't mean they can predict the future, but they can help you prepare for the future. So when you look at an elderly person, you don't look at their birth date. You want to know, is their mind still alive? Can they contribute? This is a thing that we humans look forward to, because that is helping everybody get older. As you get older, your understanding must increase. And if you don't have an elderly person to help you to understand what is right, what is wrong, what happens when things go wrong, are you prepared for when things go wrong? Of course they are. Murphy's Law affects everybody. Yes, Murphy, we're humans, we're not perfect, and things can go wrong. And if you're not prepared for anything that can go wrong, then you're in a little trouble because you haven't learned enough yet. But there's always hope. You can always learn something new. Nobody knows everything. So we are dependent on the people who have survived to help us survive. And that's what we're looking for. However, there is even a greater help for humanity, and that is God. He put us here, and it's a good thing. We must show that we can enjoy it, and after the years you spend on the planet, you should be able to repeat some of the good things as well as the bad. It's not perfect, but it's the humanity that we live in. And we depend on other humans to help us. A lot of those old humans wrote things down. We call it scripture. We call it good books. And those ideas do not go away. A good idea of 1,000 years ago is still a good idea today. So, love God, understand, and be prepared for the future. The older you get, your future is shrinking. Wake up and make sure you use your full knowledge to prepare for the next life.
Thank you. That was beautiful. I want to just share 2 points bouncing off what you just said. Number one, getting older, even as we're in our younger years, teenagers and young adults in their 20s, it reminds me when I was in a biology class in Paramus High School in 1977, and the teacher cited a clinical study done at a major university where tip-top athletes, I think members of the football team, the varsity football team, who did an experiment with three-year-olds in a clinical setting where the football players had to mimic everything the three-year-olds did. And we're talking about prime athletes. I played high school football, and I played against people who eventually went into semi-pro and not in football, but in baseball. But I've encountered very, very highly talented, godly blessed athletes. And these athletes, after like 15, 20 minutes, were exhausted. Maybe at the most an hour. They couldn't keep up with the energy, the sheer energy of a three-year-old. So a 20-year-old in relation to a three-year-old is actually an older person. So at the same time, too, we don't say the 20-year-old is over the hill or anything like that, God forbid. But it just says that everything is relative. Not only that, there are exercises that people can engage in. My father, may rest in peace, engaged in such an exercise. He went to these classes when he lived in Mahwah, New Jersey, how he would write memoirs of his youth. And he reported that after he wrote his memoirs of his youth, he actually felt more youthful. So sometimes we have to go back in time, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, reliving a blessed moment early in one's life and to feel invigorated. And sometimes people are fooled, Dennis. They think it's just the same old, they're very... No. No day is the same as the other. Every day has own nuance. Every moment has its own nuance. And this is what, as I wrote to Mr. Garfinkel, that we must take advantage of the fact that we are worthy to be in this world at a young age, at an adolescent age, at a middle age, an elderly age. I mean, both you and I are in the realm of grandfathers. I guess you're also a great-grandfather, I'm assuming. Whatever it may be, but Dennis, how can we encourage people? It's so important, no matter what a person's past was, is to try to live in the moment and go forward and develop at any level a person's able to develop at, whether it be spiritually, intellectually, emotionally, or any other way.
Well, for one thing, we cannot repeat our mistakes. We are creatures of habit, but you don't want to accumulate bad habits. Bad habits sometimes have a way of hanging around. We must be able to, as we get older, to discard some of these bad habits. Some of them may stay with you. Others don't. But there's a reason for that, and that is that you don't need some of these bad habits for the future. But what is a bad habit? How are you going to find out? How are you going to measure the habits that you have? You measure it by asking older people, does it make sense? Is it a worthwhile habit? Can I change it? How should I change it? Am I emphasizing the wrong things? Am I making mistakes that I made that years ago and I'm repeating them over again? The one thing we do know is that your physicality doesn't increase as you get older. But does your mind? Have you really opened up your mind to all possibilities? God gave you a very big mind. If you're not using it, it isn't that you're going to lose it. By not using it, you're only hurting yourself. So it's up to you to use all the intellectual ability that God has given you. And how do you know that? Maybe you haven't tested yourself. Maybe you haven't pushed yourself. We cannot and we will not accept the past with all its bad things. We must be able to change ourselves and the future by making better choices. You can make the choices you want, but if you want to repeat what you have done in the past, why are you getting older? Why are you aging? Are you accumulating anything as you get older? Can you talk about good things you've done, accomplished, and good things that you plan to do? You must challenge yourself. You must challenge your mind. When we go to sleep at night, we have imagination. When we wake up, we should be able to face the worldly problems we have, facing humanity, and looking towards the future. You must find out where you fit in and go forward. There's nothing to stop you except yourself. If you can't accept yourself, God will help you.
Thank you, Dennis. So we're now going to turn now to, you know, the main course of today's humble presentation. We're starting off from the book of Proverbs, chapter 3, verse 26, which connects to, I believe, tangentially, if not in the most direct way, what we've been talking about up to this point in today's offering program. Here we go. Book of Proverbs, written by King Solomon with prophetic spirit, chapter 3, verse 26. For the Lord, for the Creator, shall be your trust, and he shall keep your foot from being caught. In chapter 26, in the oral Torah tradition, that Rabbeinu Yonah, who lived about 700-800 years ago, said that lest you be caught in the sins of the city, as you are innocent, for the righteous who are innocent of sin and trust in the Lord will merit a miracle and be saved from the destruction of the city that is to be destroyed. Now, we've seen in recent weeks there have been earthquakes. There was a tremendous flood in the Arab Emirates, I think it's called the United Arab Emirates, which is a small island tucked in off the Persian Gulf. And I don't know how many people were lost in that natural occurrence of a rainstorm. Of course, there were people who were lost on that bridge in Baltimore, unfortunately, when the boat crashed into the bridge. Now, we're not pointing fingers and saying, well, because those people died, they were wicked. We're talking about the individual himself has to come to some sort of righteous accounting, so to speak, a spiritual bookkeeper or a spiritual accountant of their own thoughts, speech, and action. So, Dennis, you've seen a lot in your years. You've lived through the brightness of the 1950s. You've lived through the tumultuous, argumentations that took place with the Vietnam War, and then the Cold War, and the wars between Israel and Egypt, and then, you know, what happened with Iran, what's going on with Iran and Israel. So certainly I'm sure you can testify that you, the Almighty has kept you from allowing, kept you from getting your foot caught in some sort of situation which could have been your demise. Care to elaborate on that?
Well, Maimonides preached moderation, moderation of everything. But he zeroed in on the humanity. Humanity has feelings. Yes, our feelings sometimes, we act and do things without thinking. But it means that we have put the stamp of approval on it. And the one thing that we have to worry about, is, if, for instance, is our anger. How far can we take our anger? Can we kill people out of anger? Yes, we can. Do you have control over your anger if that happens? No, you don't. You may think you do, but you come out with excuses or reasons that why it should happen, why you should take it to the nth degree. Maimonides said you don't have to go that far. There's a big, wide world out there, and you can pick and choose. Why go to extremes? You don't need to. The thing that always hit me was, if all these people are angry at each other, when will they ever have peace? They'll never have peace because they're arguing and they take it to the next step and then the next step and they keep escalating and they think it's the positive thing to do. It isn't. You're going in a negative direction. You must temper your anger. You must hold back and say, wait a minute. I can think of a better way than to just get mad. Being mad doesn't prove anything. Being smart does. If you can figure out why you're losing yourself, your emotions when you get angry, now you're understanding what is control of the emotions. That is one of the things that will bug you for your lifetime. If you can't control your emotions, what can you control? Do you get too happy sometimes? Do you become too bad of a person sometimes? Why allow the extremes to take over as though you're given the stamp of approval? We cannot say war is good, killing is good. No. They're against humanity. What are you trying to do to your fellow humans? If you can't figure out what their problem is and help them out, that doesn't mean you pick up a weapon to harm them, to hurt them. Why? We can't keep escalating our arguments to the point that we threaten other people's lives. Is the argument worth that? Or is our anger more important than our love of God? We actually have two groups of people who actually pray and love the same God. And they all say, my God is a peaceful God. My God is all forgiving. Of course we say that. Do we practice it? Do we understand it? And yet we have killers on one side and murderers on the other side. And we wait to see who is going to be the winner. There is no winner. We're all losers. Yes, Don has given you the facts that our population increases. Isn't that a hint that no matter what we do, no matter how many wars we have, we still increase our population? No matter who says that our food supply is going to disappear, it hasn't happened. It won't happen. God provides. Humanity thrives on God's love. We must understand that principle because we are part of it. We help the definition of what is human. To be human is to follow a lot of good things. It's not easy. Not easy trying to be good. You have to make hard decisions from time to time. But as you get older, those decisions should be easier because you know more and understand more. The more you The more you understand, the better off we'll all be. But we still need to control our emotions, because that's in our mind. Our body can get mad, but that's only if our mind approves of that. If you can't control your mind, can you control your body? If someone has a bad habit, is it that they're doing it blindly? Then they're not thinking about it? If you're a diabetic, does that mean you ate too much sugar? But do you like sweet things? Is it important? Is it more important that you do harm to your body and continue to do that? Why go along that foolish track? You don't need to. You're smarter and better. So we rely on humans to use their mind and to control their feelings and love God. And if you do that, your future will improve. You will feel better, and you will actually say, I'm alive. But to be alive is to enjoy it. And if you can enjoy all the positive things about humanity, you are on the wrong track. So, love God and help other people and stay away from bad things.
I'd like to share something, Dennis, that someone shared with me. One second, Dennis. One second. Okay, Dennis, I'm sorry. So I was just thanking the plumber who fixed the wire. You know, we had a leaky faucet right before the holiday, and you don't tell a Jewish woman to stop using a sink when she has to cook a whole day. Anyway, I want to tell you a story that a friend told me on Friday afternoon. I don't know this movie. There was some movie, I think, with Richard Pryor, where he worked at some company in some official capacity, and he had access to the payroll of all the employees. So every day, he took a penny from everyone's salary. So no one felt it. And after 20 years, he came up with $1 million. For himself. Do you know such a movie? I don't know such a movie. Anyway, so I said to him in response, think about it this way, so-and-so. Every day do an act of kindness. And after 20 years, don't be surprised that you'll see blessings way beyond that $1 million that was fictitiously portrayed in this movie with Richard Pryor. That people are underestimating the power of doing good in this world. It's like planting a seed, a particularized seed of redemption. And we don't know how the fruit is going to manifest. Maybe it'll be a vegetable. Maybe it'll be a tree that doesn't bear fruit, but it provides shade for animal life and human life, all different types of life, whatever it may be, bird life. So my point is this. If we're here, and as you said, we need to purify ourselves. And one of the ways of purifying ourselves is doing good. And we're going to turn now to, and Dennis, after I read this verse, I'll ask you to comment on this. Chapter 3, verse 27, King Solomon pleads with human, not just Jewish people, with all people. Do not withhold good from the one who needs it when you have the power in your hand to do it. If you see a friend wishes to benefit the poor, do not prevent him from doing so. Because there is sometimes, Rashi comments on it in the oral Torah tradition, elucidation, sometimes we're doing good and people are trying to dissuade us from doing that good. Especially, don't be persuaded by someone who's telling you, don't help this guy, you know who this guy is? Because if you're doing a complete act of goodness and mercy, you know, do it while you can. Because there perhaps will be a day, according to Rashi, when you won't have the power in your hand physically or economically to help that other person. So then it's your take on this matters, how people have to really take advantage of today. Now, I'm not saying people have to, you know, empty out their bank accounts or their IRA accounts or whatever assets they've, but think about how they can help a person on the most simplest level, just thinking good about another person or saying, good morning, neighbor. Or call your parents if they're still alive, or call your children, you know, and share some wisdom with them, and let them tell you stories about how life is going, and you're doing good. So Dennis, what can we do to get people to realize if you've got the power to do something today, do it today. Don't push it off till tomorrow.
Well, there's a human logic that comes through here, Don, and that is if you're doing good, that means you're not doing bad. If you emphasize what is good, you're de-emphasizing what is bad. There's a benefit there. There's a benefit for you and the people you're helping. Why? Because we all need help. We are imperfect. If we were perfect, we'd be in heaven. But we're not. We're on earth. We have to deal with earth problems. And earth problems depend on how good humanity treats itself. If we're doing good, we're not doing bad. And that is a positive concept. Our mind is not wandering when we do good. We're emphasizing a positive step forward that either helps us or helps us our fellow humans. There's nothing wrong with that. Do good while you can, because who knows what the future may bring. Can you still hold on to your doing good in the future? You should.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Now, something I mentioned before, but again, it's in the verse now in chapter 3, verse 28 in Mishlei and Proverbs by King Solomon. Do not say to your fellow, quote, go and return and tomorrow will give, though you have it with you now. So the Talmud states in the Tractate of Bava Metzi, which talks about different types of business laws of finding things and when to return them, how to make a claim on something that was left in an open space, how one person can merit to it more than another person, depends on the circumstances, the context. If one has the ability to pay the wages of one's employee that day, don't hold the wages back. Now, of course, in modern society, there are different contractual agreements, but ultimately, according to the Torah, which is a very high standard, I don't know how many people practice this today, and we don't want to make people accountable, but we're saying if you really want to go back to the biblical standards, that a person should pay their wages every day. And King Solomon, through divine inspiration, forbids one to send away his hired employee when he has no money, when he has the money, in fact, to pay him. And also, Rabbeinu Yonah says on this verse, if you vow to give a gift of your own volition, hasten and try to fulfill what you promised as soon as possible. Meaning, don't wait 6 weeks later and say people are contributing for very worthy matters. Don't push it off. Don't be a procrastinator. Be an instigator, because if you do things with alacrity in terms of doing good, you're actually going to be, if it's done in a way that other people are observing your alacrity in doing good, they themselves will start to hopefully, number one, increase their acts of kindness, and kindness is also kind thoughts and kind speech and hopefully kind actions, whatever they can do to help other people. But they themselves will also develop this virtue of being alacritous, having alacrity, having zealousness to go ahead and do something very good. Dennis, your take on these matters.
If you're a good person, it means you're fair. If you're fair, then nobody will think you're being unfair, because there's nothing more that rattles other humans if they see something as being unfair. That leads to injustice, unfairness, preference, excuses. If you're a fair person, you don't need excuses. You know what the right thing is, and that's what you believe you're doing. If you believe in it, it will happen. But if you don't know what fairness is, then how do you know what you're doing? Because you must be able to understand what is the standard you're following. What principles are you following? You must be fair. If you don't know what the word means, you have to find out. And you have to know how to use it and when to use it. Like Don says, if you let the moment go by and you're not fair, is it still a positive moment? Can it be held forever? No. To be fair at the moment says, do what you believe is the correct thing to do. And if you have enough understanding, you will make the right choice. We were given that in our minds when we were all born. We have to use it when we get older. That's why God put those ideas into our heads. We didn't invent them. They were there. Sometimes we call it a conscience. But if you want to be fair, it's up to you and it's your choice. But remember, if you're being fair, you're showing other humans how to be fair. By practicing fairness, you are showing other people the way. The way is important because there's young people, middle-aged, and even older people that may not understand how to be fair. But if you practice fairness, it will rub off. Guaranteed. That's a reward that you will get, not on earth, in heaven. It'll be a good mark against your name. But it's not against, it's for your name. So remember, be fair because everybody else wants to be fair. But you must show people that you practice fairness.
Thank you, Dennis. Now, basically here in the American society, aside from the anomalies of social unrest, which unfortunately have been flaming up the last couple of years, I think, during the corona era, post-corona era, of course there was social unrest the last couple hundred years into the history of this country. However, there is a type of behavior which is very unseemly. When people are living in a civil manner, in a neighborhood, in a city, in a country, and other people come to rely one on the other. So King Solomon has some very stern advice for when people are living together, what one person should not do to another. And here it is, black and white, nice and simple, but it carries with it profound instruction, which I'm looking forward to how you think, comment on this, Dennis, as well. So here's chapter 3, verse 29. King Solomon says, devise no harm against your fellow when he dwells securely with you. I mean, there's nothing more hideous when a person feels, when person A feels comfortable with person B, and B, person B does something to undo their sense of purpose. And sometimes they even shame them. And in the oral Torah tradition of Israel, on this verse, devise no harm against your fellow, do not think it, but it does not deviate from a severe situation if he devises harm against him in such a situation. It is possible that this verse refers to, this is by Rabbeinu Yonah, by the way, it is possible that this verse refers to a case in which one may plot against his fellow to lower the latter's esteem in public. However, it could be the wheel of fortune can turn, and this person may gain power to harm him. So we're talking about someone who did something against his neighbor in a very scheming fashion, and then they gain power to actually do more harm. He must, however, warn his fellow not to have confidence in him, meaning ultimately we're not putting our trust in our neighbors as we would put our trust in God, but at the same time, too, we're telling one person to the other, you're living at peace with your neighbor. Don't do something to undermine them, even though you may gain the stature. And by the way, he wasn't brought here, but the person that a person demeans might actually gain power and seek to cause revenge. And this whole catalyst was because person A didn't treat person B with proper respect or did things to unseat their sense of stability or standing in the community that they're a part of. Dennis, you take on these matters. We should avoid, and I think in even in martial arts, there's a saying I've heard, do not go to a place of danger or avoid doing harm. Because ultimately the martial arts, certain strains of it, are just for self-defense, not to be offensive belugas shaking down people for whatever they want to shake them down for. Your take on these matters.
Well, we humans do have a prime directive, even though a lot of people don't practice it. And that is, do no harm. Harm can be, you decide to take a chunk out of a tree. Are you doing harm? If you step on a bug, are you doing harm? If the bug has no care about you, it goes about its own life. Could you step on it? just because it's a bug, do no harm. You must have reason for everything you do. But if you go around doing harm, where is the reasoning? What are you trying to do? Are you trying to push something that's evil or bad? No, you're not. But you can inadvertently do harm. So we must be careful of our fellow human beings. We must be careful of the earth that we're in. Because if you harm the earth, you are inadvertently also harming humanity. If you're against what the earth is, you're not for humanity. So they go hand in hand. God created us, and he created the earth. He didn't create this to do harm. We were supposed to enjoy it, love it, and get the benefits from it. That's what we're here for. If you are doing harm, you're against everything that God has ever set up. So what motivates you to do harm? Do you want to? It only can be taken as though you're following the devil's ideas of how to hurt your fellow humans. Do you really want to do that? Do you understand what you're doing? So the whole trick is to avoid doing harm. Harm is not beneficial. And your conscience will be around to remind you the harm that you do. And you'll remember this for years to come. And you may not be able to understand it so that you can absorb it. But the one thing you can do is stay away from doing harm. Now, what is harm? If you don't know what harm is, then you don't know the difference between right and wrong. So therefore, I'm not going to teach you what is harm. You know what harm is. If you can think about it, you should be able to understand it because you can figure out what the outcomes are. But if you want to do harm, you can do that. That's your choice. Your choice anytime if you want to do harm. But why? You must have a reason to do harm. Maybe you can't control your emotions. Okay, but is that an excuse? We humans love excuses. We think excuses will solve everything. Excuses are only putting off the truth. Eventually, you must uncover where truth is. That is your purpose while you're on the earth. You have nature, you have God, and you have fellow humans. Somewhere between all that is the truth. It's not hiding. Can you see it? Do you believe in it? You should, because it was all created by God.
And for the individual to experience on their individualistic way in their part of the universe, again, to glorify the Creator that they're giving this opportunity to choose what is right and to avoid what is wrong. Dennis, I want to end with one more verse. We'll spill over a little bit over the hour time. That's okay. That's my day off. It's your day off. Chapter 3, verse 30 in Mishlei, in Proverbs. Do not quarrel with anyone without cause if he did you no harm. Why start an argument with someone? So according to the oral Torah tradition, that the commentator points out, this is from Ben Yonah, that it's not proper to quarrel with someone, even if he did you harm. But it's even a far greater transgression to quarrel with someone without cause if he did no harm. Explains that there was no, without cause means that he harmed only with words but not inflict physical injury or loss. So sometimes, you know, we say sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. By the way, there is a type of trauma, a verbal-induced trauma. So quarreling with someone who did you no harm, maybe because, I don't know, a person stubbed their foot, maybe they lost money in a certain investment, maybe something other is going on domestically in their home or whatever reason it be, why start up with someone? If you have a negative feeling and it happens that someone comes in within the range of your consciousness through your seeing them or hearing them or just recalling them in your mind, what does it benefit them? What does it benefit you? All of a sudden you have like quarrelsome thoughts or have quarrelsome speech or take quarrelsome actions with a person without cause. That is, what can we do to educate people from our many years of experience, your many years of experience, I should say, that it's just not worth it to go there and start harassing people without cause?
Well, that some people like to disturb things, and they disturb it in such a way that they're not being fair, and they are causing indirect harm. The situation of people who live up in the mountains and people who live in the lower, at the bottom of the mountains. There's an argument and disagreement that's been going on thousands of years, millennium. The people in the mountains don't like the people at the bottom of the mountain. The people at the bottom of the mountain don't like the people at the top of the mountain. Why? Because they live in two different places. Is that a reason to cause harm? To cause argument? If you can't control your emotions, yes, if you live at the bottom, you think that the people at the top are causing you all the problems. And the people in the top of the mountain believe the people at the bottom of the mountain are causing their problems. Those are excuses. We humans love excuses. We hide behind them. We push them out when we should be thinking and using our minds to understand things. We quickly accept the excuses. You cannot do that. You can do no harm unless you understand what you're doing. Just because you live at the top or the bottom of the mountain, is that a reason? You can't control your anger. So an argument that can happen with humans anytime is escalated. Why do we escalate our arguments? Must you do that all the time? There are people who don't care what you say. They're going to argue. Why? They like to argue. But those are people who are causing harm everywhere. You must stop the cycle of this uncontrollable anger. We don't need it. We have to cut it off at some point. You should know how far to take an argument so you do no harm. And that is harm physically and mentally. Why? We must learn to live together. But remember those people at the top of the mountain and the bottom of the mountain. Anytime they meet, they want to argue. Is it really important if you live at the top of the mountain or the bottom? Are you living? Doesn't the living conditions be experienced by both the people at the top and the bottom? Where is the fairness? Who is doing the harm? Pray for guidance. That's why we have God. That's why we have many other things. There's always someplace we can go, to a book, a library, elderly people even, to help understand what are our make-believe differences that we believe is so important. On a human scale, they're not that important, but you keep trying to make importance out of nothing by using excuses. So do no harm. Watch your words and control your emotion.
Thank you, Dennis. We've now come to the end of another broadcast, which I think went, you know, it was a nice pace. We covered a lot of dialogue and sharing our life experiences with everyone. And we want to end off the show segueing out. And I'd like to ask anyone who's listening to our program live or will eventually hear this archive version. This song is called the Rachamim Rabbi Melody. I mean, it's a melody about abundant mercies. And perhaps when you, it's a 5-minute and 40-second song, perhaps you can join in the melody by meditating on how there should be an abundance of mercies to heal the way of Avachad, one love, Gor Elachad, one destiny, Kolano, for all of us, but Darchinim Darki Shalom, in a pleasant and peaceful way. And I want to remind everyone, you should never feel disappointed to know you've been anointed with the Tzelem Elohim, your divine image will help you get in scrimmage to make this world a pleasant, peaceful habitat for more than 8,100,000,000 human beings. That's how many people flying in the face of all the social engineering misnomers of what the purpose of creation is. We're going to go off and wish everyone, for those of us who will be celebrating Passover, maybe it be a wonderful Passover, Pesach, and maybe we see very soon in the days the revelation, Mashiach Tzidkenu, our righteous Messiah, revelations of Torah, prophetic teachings, that will be for men, women, and children of all ages, because we're all the children of God. Until next week, hopefully to be rejoined by Dennis Ryan, our teacher and student advocate and disseminator of the teachings of the Nesher Godol, taking the deep teachings of Rabbi Moshe by my mind and turning it into applesauce so that everyone can swallow it. This is your local international cyberspace Torah activist, Torah Askan Dan Jose. Wishing everyone a wonderful week. Stay safe and pray for the peace of 8,100,000,000 people. Here we go. The Rachamim Rabbi melody, the melody of abundant mercies. Take care, everyone.